morning and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet and I am here in the studio alone. Lauren is doing something with the kid, like taking her to school, taking care of her. You know, two-year-olds, they're so demanding. And Patty is home fetching, so I am here with our guest, Deneen Robinson. Welcome, Deneen.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah, we're glad that you came. Deneen is the education coordinator for HIV, for the HIV research unit at UT Southwestern. Did I get that right?
Yeah.
Close enough. It is 7 a.m. We have been up since 5. That's close enough.
Actually, I've been up since 4:45.
Okay, well. We're going to talk a little bit about vaccine research because my brain just thinks that way at 7 in the morning. Right? Good. Yeah.
Okay.
You too. Okay. I thought so. Let's just talk a little bit about what's going on with vaccine research, because HIV has been around with us. We just passed AIDS at 30.
Yeah.
We thought at the very beginning, well, you know, we just do a little bit of research. We come up with a vaccine. They did it for some other new infections that, you know, that came around that time, that we found a way to cure it. Why haven't we with this one?
Well, I mean, this is one of the things that we've discovered is that there's really no magic presto. And I think just like every other kind of vaccines, viruses change. They change over time depending on the population, depending on the climate, depending on how they interact with humans. And so as viruses change or mutate, one of the things that we've discovered about HIV is that the mutations stay around, and unfortunately we have not found a way to get ahead of that successfully for any length of time. And so therefore vaccine research has been one of the things that has been challenging up until this point. But the cool thing, I think, in 2011 is that research has become promising. We actually have some results from a number of international trials that suggest to us that a vaccine is possible. And that's in part why we're doing the research that we're doing.
And that's the first time I've heard that from anybody involved in research. Mostly what I've been hearing for years and years and years is that we'll do a vaccine trial and they'll even end it early because it's just not working.
Right.
And you're saying now that there is some vaccine research going on right here at UT Southwestern down the street from our studio that looks promising.
Yes. Well, we are doing a study called HVTN-505, which is a part of an international trial that the HIV Vaccine Trials Network is doing that's actually looking at. At this point, we're actually looking to see if we can prevent HIV infection.
And, okay, so this trial is actually looking for a vaccine that is going to prevent it. So it would be for people who are negative.
Correct.
To prevent them getting it if somebody were to infect them.
That is correct. That would prevent them from getting if they were exposed.
If they were exposed, yes.
Correct.
Okay, so there are different types of approaches to vaccines. Tell me about what the different approaches would be.
Well, there are a number of different ways that vaccine research is done. It can be you can use a DNA vaccine approach. You can use a peptide vaccine approach. One of the what is awesome about this vaccine trial is that we're actually using a combination approach. We're actually using two vaccines. One is a DNA vaccine, and then we're using the Ad5, which is the adenovirus 5, as a way of getting this synthetic these synthetic pieces of HIV into the body so that the immune system will recognize it and ideally create antibodies.
Okay, so now I've just been jotting down my list of here's what I don't know what she's talking about. Okay, so let's start with, first of all, what's a DNA vaccine? What's a peptide vaccine? What's a What are you talking about?
Okay, so a DNA vaccine uses copies of a small number of HIV genes, which are inserted into pieces of DNA. So we are people who are, DNA is a double-strand nucleic acid, okay? And so what happens is they, in our strand of DNA, they insert synthetic pieces so that when the virus, so that when the body sees it, it sees it as if it is an actual strand of DNA, accepts it, recognizes it, allows it to do whatever it's going to do in the body. Okay? So that is a DNA-based vaccine. A peptide-based vaccine uses tiny pieces of proteins from the HIV virus and as a way of getting into the body. Okay? And so what we're doing is we're using a combination of the DNA vaccine as well as and it's what's called a prime boost strategy. So the person receives this initial, in our case, three bioinjector, meaning that it actually doesn't inject into the skin, doses of the virus.
Okay, so I like this kind of vaccine, no needles. So how does it actually get into you?
Yes, it actually, it's kind of like there's a pressure that's on, placed on the arm.
Mm-hmm.
And from this machine called a bioinjector.
Mm-hmm.
And then dose four.
It absorbs?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
It's boost. They get a boost,
mm-hmm.
right? And so the combination of these two things, what we're hoping to find out is if this strategy will successfully cause the immune system to respond and create antibodies. Our ultimate goal is to see if we can quote-unquote, trick the immune system to creating antibodies so that it goes through the process of creating a response so that if a person were to have unprotected sex with someone and they were actually exposed to HIV, then the immune system will have gone through the appropriate response so that on site, it knows what to do,
okay,
so that infection does not happen.
So it sounds like with DNA, with the combination DNA and peptide, what you're really talking
no,
about...
No, DNA and Ad5
is
what we're doing.
Okay. It seems like you're doing two different things. One is to trick the virus, and one is to actually kill the virus. In other words, one is to make the virus do the wrong thing and not do what it needs to do to actually take hold, but the other one is to... take the virus and kill it?
Well, yes and no. What we're doing is, one is a way of getting the body to accept it,
mm-hmm.
and the Ad5 is the vehicle that we're using to get it into the body.
Okay.
And so the DNA vaccine is going to be put into the body through this, the Ad5 is the vector.
Okay.
Okay, so once the body accepts it,
mm-hmm.
then yes, it will go through the process of creating antibodies,
okay,
and ultimately setting up a response so that setting up an environment so that if someone is exposed to HIV, then the body already knows what to do to get rid of it.
Get rid of it. Now, a couple of things,
or to not cause infection to happen.
Okay, a couple of things that. And this might be old information, and I know with HIV research it is constantly
changing.
But this might be old, and let's see what we've learned about this since. First of all, one of the reasons that we always said that it was difficult to produce a vaccine was because with other viruses or whatever that we're trying to cure, we can get the immune system to start working. And the problem with HIV is that HIV attacks the immune system. And so that's been one of the problems all along with curing this. Not curing it, but with
treating it
with a vaccine or preventing it. And is that still true, or do we find, yeah, that's true, but we're finding ways to get the immune system to actually work?
Well, with this vaccine, we're looking to get the immune system to actually work.
Okay,
we're using synthetic copies, synthetic pieces, and that's the important thing. We're using synthetic pieces of HIV.
So nobody will be infected with HIV from this vaccine?
No.
It's not HIV that's being injected into you?
No, it's not.
Right.
And we're looking to see if, in doing this, we can create the kind of immune response that would protect the individual so that if they were exposed to HIV through unprotected sex, sharing needles,
whatever.
Right.
The reason that you're infected. But,
right.
But those are the major ways that it's transmitted. It's,
yes.
You know, for anybody listening, we can go back a little bit. It's not transmitted through the air. It's not transmitted touching somebody.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That is correct.
Yeah.
And so what we're wanting to make sure that in doing this, we can create an immune response so that, and that's what creating antibodies is. We are looking to get the immune system to do what it's supposed to do in the presence of something that's not supposed to be in the body.
And the trick is, though, that you need to do it fairly quickly because HIV does attach to the immune system and starts destroying the immune system.
That is, yes.
Yeah, so it needs to do it, but
and it
only
needs to be a sustained response.
And then it needs,
yes.
Right, because it needs to make sure that it actually does kill all of the HIV that's there because you have just a tiny bit left. It might get rid of some of it. And that's actually another thing that I was going to say is some of the old wisdom that or stuff that we learned about HIV. It seems as though, and tell me if this, we found that this isn't true, it seems as though when HIV first gets into the body, for the first 24 hours or so, the immune system actually does a fairly good job of attacking HIV because it's over that period that the HIV actually attaches itself to the immune system. And then, without any kind of drugs, without any kind of response to it, it takes over the immune system. But at first, there is an immune response.
So it takes, within the first 48 hours, scientifically, we know that you have your best attempt at eradication. Mm-hmm. After 48 hours, it takes the body approximately 12 weeks to have enough antibodies so that you would be able to recognize it on the standard tests that we do.
Mm-hmm.
And so within that time, the body is actually trying to do what its best job of fighting HIV. After that 12 weeks, it becomes relationship, essentially. So there's a coexistence that's happening between HIV and whatever else is going on in our immune system, in our body, excuse me. And unfortunately, within that time, HIV has done a very good job of positioning itself in what are called reservoirs so that it can sustain itself and actually live out in the body for a very long time.
Okay.
Well, until you die.
Right. It overtakes the immune system completely until your body can't fight other diseases. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about safety.
Okay.
Because we mentioned this. With some vaccines, you're actually injecting a little piece of that vaccine into the person in order to create the illness, in order to make your immune system fight it.
That happens in some flu vaccines, yes. That's happened in some other kinds of vaccines, yes. But in this particular vaccine, I want to reiterate that we are not giving people
HIV. Right. And like in a flu vaccine, actually, there's a difference between live virus and dead virus.
Correct.
With the flu vaccines that they make now, it's dead virus.
Correct.
It used to be that, you know, if you got the flu vaccine too close to your actually having the flu, you'd get a worse case of flu because you just injected some flu into yourself. That doesn't happen even with the flu vaccine anymore. But with this one, it's little DNA pieces that were taken.
Correct.
What is it about those DNA pieces, though, that's working? Is it enough of the HIV for the HIV virus to recognize it? Or
you mean for the immune system
to
recognize?
For the immune system to recognize? Or
what they've done is they've taken key pieces of HIV. For example, the envelope, which is the part that the immune system recognizes pretty successfully. And they've taken that, and in the lab they have restructured it and made it synthetic so that it is actually not the true envelope of HIV, and inserted it, as I said, into DNA using the adenovirus as the vector. One of the things that we're looking at is to see how will the immune system respond to what we are presenting.
So it, is this kind of what it's doing? The envelope is the outside of the HIV virus.
It is the outside.
And your immune system recognizes that.
Yes.
And in fact, the way it's shaped locks onto the immune system nicely.
Locks onto the CD4 cell.
The CD4 cell. So it locks it, which is part of the immune system, a cell within the... And so if you have that envelope, it can attach to the immune system. But the dangerous part isn't that it locks on. I mean, that is, because if it didn't lock on, you wouldn't have HIV. But what the dangerous part and the what destroys your immune system is what's inside.
Correct.
So you've taken out what's inside and just we're locking it on, and the immune system tends to recognize that envelope and can create some kind of a response to it.
Well, what's happening is, I'm trying not to be so scientific.
That's okay. she's talking science, I'll talk English.
what's happening is, I mean, the simplest way to explain this is when you are exposed to a cold, your body will go through a process of looking at, okay, so I've seen, this is a virus, it's not supposed to be here, so how can I get rid of it? And that's in part why we have all these horrific symptoms, get our temperature may go up, our head may feel heavy, we may have, some loss of energy and all those kinds of things, may express phlegm, sneeze, maybe have to go to the bathroom more than normal. But these are all ways that our immune system is responding to this foreign invader, saying, get out, get out, get out. In the process of that, you also have a cell called a B cell, which I like to think of is the cell that is like the photographer in your body. So it takes a picture of what is being exposed to, and mm-hmm. says, okay, we need to make sure we figure out some way to remember this moment so that if we are ever faced with this again, we will know what to do to get rid of it. And it makes, and that's how antibodies are created. So in the creation of antibodies, you have in your body now a way of protecting yourself in the event that you are exposed to this cold ever again. So when scientists creating this vaccine, the idea was to, based on the research from the past, what we know, meaning that there are lots of things that we've learned. Number one, we've learned that it is safer to use this, that if you are... we'll get to that later.
Why don't we take a break?
Okay.
We need to take a break, and we're talking to Deneen Robinson. She's the education coordinator for HIV research, for the HIV research unit at UT Southwestern, right down the street from our studios, which is why she's here, because I saw her walk into work and I grabbed her up the street. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly.
I'm going to kidnap you
something like that.
Air.
KNON thanks you for your pledge to our recent pledge drive. Now's the time to make your pledge count. Send your pledge to KNON, P.O. Box 710-909, Dallas, Texas 75371. If you missed our pledge drive, you can still support community radio by pledging on the web at KNON.org. Your pledge only counts if you pay it. KNON, Box 710-909, Dallas, Texas 75371. Be sure to put the name of the show you're supporting on the check, money order, or the envelope. Questions about KNON's pledge drive, call 214-828-9500, extension 234.
KNON thanks Buyer Imaging Copier Solutions for their support of KNON. Buyer Imaging Copier Solutions provides KNON all our copy services. Buyer Imaging Copier Solutions sells, leases, rents, and services a full line of color and black and white Canon copiers with scanning, printing, and faxing capabilities. Buyer Imaging Copier Solutions offers wholesale packaging back to the consumer market in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. Overstock, demo models, and used equipment with full warranty is available. For more information, 214-431-5191 or BEYERImaging.com.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet, and I'm here in the studio with Deneen Robinson, the Education Coordinator for HIV Research at UT Southwestern. Okay, where were we? Because I was completely lost, which is why I thought that was a great time to take a break.
Okay, so there were two questions on the table. The one question is what actually is the study vaccine? Mm-hmm. The second question was why is this vaccine safe?
Right.
And how, well, so there's technically three questions. And how exactly is it going to prevent people from getting HIV?
Good. She's good. She doesn't need me. She'll ask the questions and answer them.
Right. So in answer to the first question, I want to make sure that we are clear that the study vaccines for HVT and 505 contain man-made pieces of DNA that look like pieces of HIV.
But can't cause any kind of infection.
Right. Exactly. And so what DNA does is it tells our cells to make proteins. And so when the study participant is injected with this vaccine, it will tell the body to make proteins so that once the person in whatever it is that they're doing in their lives are potentially exposed to HIV, the body will have gone through the process. Once it makes proteins, then the immune system will infect a response. And then once the response happens, antibodies will be created. And in the presence of antibodies, future exposure, the person may be protected from HIV infection. Second question, is it safe? It's safe, yes, because we do not use live HIV, killed HIV, or cells that are infected with HIV.
Right. This is something that looks like a part of the HIV.
Correct.
And the part that you're using is actually the envelope, the outside of it.
We're using pieces of the envelope,
yes. So that it looks like HIV, but it's just the outside of it, the inside of it, that which is where the damage is manufactured, isn't there.
That is correct. Yeah. We're using pieces of the envelope so that the body is able to go through this response that we just talked about, create the antibodies to prevent the person from being exposed.
And hopefully when the body...
This
is what you're looking for, that when the body sees something that looks like this, because this is what an HIV virus will look like, when it sees a real one, it'll go in and say, oh, I've seen that before, and it'll go in and say, here's the antibody that I've created, now I'm going to go kill it.
Absolutely.
Normally, when you've never been exposed to HIV, your body doesn't have any of the antibodies.
That is correct.
And so it can't produce...
It can't prevent exposure.
...enough of the antibodies because... it can't produce the antibodies because it can't... It's never seen it before, and it takes a while for the body to manufacture these antibodies to go and kill it.
Correct.
Kind of.
Yes.
Kind of.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I mean, it's simply... when you are exposed to something, your body has to create, it has to go through the process of figuring out what it is before antibody, in order to create antibodies. And so during that time, HIV is going to the various reservoirs in the body, so the body is not able in a timely fashion to create antibodies to kill HIV before HIV has found a home.
Okay.
Yes.
Good. Okay, then that makes sense. Okay, and then the last part of the question was how, well, I guess that is the how is it going to work?
How is what going to work?
How is this vaccine going to work? It's going to work by showing the body what HIV looks like. Not
creating an immune response.
And creating the immune response
so that
your body will have anytime it's exposed to it.
Right. And there's some other things that are important that we didn't mention. So who can be in this study?
Mm-hmm.
We're looking for men who have sex with men and transgender women between the ages of 18 and 50. So why not beyond 50? The reason that we're looking for people between that age group is because we found that the immune system is the most robust during that age group. Beyond 50, the immune system responds slower. And so we want a very healthy, robust immune system. And so that's why the cutoff is 50.
And you're not saying that it won't work in somebody who's over 50 years old. It's just that for the trial, you're looking for people
under the age
of 50.
You always want to do a trial in the best, most healthy in terms of the population that you're looking at.
Right.
You want to give the drug or the vaccine in this case the best chance to work. And the other thing is that we're looking for circumcised men. Why not uncircumcised men? People always ask that question, so I'll ask and answer. Because we want to, again, ensure that we give this vaccine the best chance to work. And we know from previous studies that, and we don't know why, but there have been previous studies where the use of uncircumcised men, the vaccine has not worked as well. And so we're trying to eliminate as many barriers to this trial being successful. And so we're asking for volunteers who are men who have sex with men, who have been circumcised, who are between the ages of 18 and 50, and who are HIV negative.
Okay. Good. And if they are interested in participating, how do they get in touch with you?
They can call us at 214-590-0610.
Okay. And that's your office at UT Southwestern?
Yes.
Okay. Or if not you.
And also, they can go to the web and go to www.haveahardon.org. ihaveahardon.org, and they can do the small survey there, and it will send us an email, and we will follow up with them.
Okay, and I bet if you just Google UT Southwestern vaccine trial, if you didn't write all this down,
or HETN 505.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. With vaccine trials, it's not like, oh, if this works, this is going to be on the market next year.
No. So, I wish.
Vaccine research really is very long research, always has been. And I know this from my mother, who is a bacteriologist. She worked on the polio vaccine back in the 1940s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
And what was interesting was she had a lab assistant that she and her lab partners called the snotty intern. His name was Jonas Salk.
Oh.
Who they hated. Because they said he was just obnoxious and afterwards stole all the work from the laboratory and went off and did his own thing and finally got credit for it. But they just disliked him. But they were doing this work for years before he came along. This work that's been done has been going on for how long?
I actually don't know how long. Well, I mean, we've been trying to find a vaccine since we've known about HIV.
Mm-hmm.
And so this particular study, we're actually going to follow people for quite a long time. And the reason for that is their participation in the study is going to end up being, let me make sure I'm going to tell you this correctly. Initially, in the initial trial, it was until they reached the clinical endpoints. But in this particular case, it's going to be for, I just had a brain fart. I mean, sincerely, I did. It's going to be 4 years.
Okay. And you're really just starting this one.
Actually, no. We are, one of the things that's exciting for us as a research site is that we were an add-on site.
Oh, okay.
So this trial started in 2009, and we were an add-on site last year. So we've been doing this research at UT Southwestern for a year. Our goal was initially to get 40 participants, and at this point we've gotten 45 people who are successfully enrolled in the study. And because they have expanded the number of participants in the trial overall to over 2,000, 2,200 exactly, our goal has gone from 40 to 100. So we will be following people for 2 years in the study and then a number of years, once a year after that, just to make sure that they are okay still, just to make sure that, and the other thing that we're doing that I think is awesome is that at every study visit, when a person comes in, they are not only, go through whatever the protocols are as it relates to the study, but they're also given very intense HIV prevention counseling, mm-hmm. so that we can track their behaviors and make sure that they understand transmission and how to protect themselves and all those kinds of things, because that is an essential part of this research.
Okay, so one thing you're not doing is saying, okay, we're going to give you this vaccine, and what we want you to do is go out and have the most unsafe sex you can possibly have in order to try to get infected.
Please
and
don't
we're,
do that.
We're hoping that you don't.
Please don't do that. Okay. That would be very bad.
So you're not looking for people who are going to go out and be irresponsible.
No, we want people who are in the categories, the people that I said earlier, men who have sex with men, transgender women between the ages of 18 and 50, circumcised, HIV negative. We recognize that people are still having unprotected sex. Mm-hmm. And so because they are having unprotected sex, we need them to participate in this study. And also, at the same time, we want to help them understand and recognize their responsibility.
That the best way to stay negative is still to protect yourself, and we're not looking for you to get infected.
No, we're not.
So with people who are going to participate, how are you following them? Do they come in for an HIV test? Do they come in and answer a questionnaire about... safe, yes, but on this one particular night.
I did whatever it was I did. Okay, so when a person comes in, let's say they go to the website, ihaveaheardon.org, and they say, yes, I want to participate in this study. I am a man who has sex with men. And so we call them up. We take them through a simple questionnaire to make sure that they meet the criteria. Once they say that they are interested, they come in. The initial screening that we do is to see if they have been exposed to the adenovirus, because that's the vector that we're using. And so if they've been exposed to that particular cold virus, then unfortunately they're not qualified for the study. So let's say, okay, yes, they have not, they're at 5 negative is what we would call them in-house. And then they say, okay, yes, I still want to participate in the study. Then they have a physical as a part of their second screening where they, and they consent them. So they take them through the whole, all the whole consent to make sure that they understand what they're doing, why they're doing it, and they answer any of their questions, all that kind of stuff.
And the physical is to make sure that they're healthy, that they don't have underlying heart problems, that they don't have underlying other stuff.
Issues, and that they're circumcised. So okay, so yes, they still want to participate in the study. Then they have 3 visits after that at 2 months apart. And then there's this 6-month visit after that where they are given the prime boost. And then we follow them after that. And then
for 4 years.
At every visit, they have to do a questionnaire where they talk about their behavior. Mm-hmm. And we're actually, we don't see that. That actually goes, they do it on the computer. And also,
right. And part of the reason for that is so that people don't feel like she told me that I shouldn't be doing this, and now I'm going to get
a lecture. Right. No judgment.
You just want honest answers here.
And also, at every visit, they are taken through some behavioral counseling, behavior modification, so that they can lower their risk. Because we understand that. A community that's the less HIV we have in the community, the safer it is for everyone. And then, and yes, they are tested. And when they are tested, they are given a PCR so that we can actually see.
What's a PCR?
A PCR is a test that's done to actually look for a virus. So we're not looking for antibodies. We want to see if they actually have virus. And then they are given the results, you know, when the results come in, they are notified and given the results. So we follow them very closely, the thing that's important, and my experience, because I have had the opportunity to sit in on a visit, is our staff take very good care of the people who participate in this study. They are given the highest respect, they actually call them in between visits to make sure that they understand when they're supposed to come in. If they have questions, they contact them via email or text message or phone, whichever is best for the participant. So we do our best job to make sure that the participant understands that they are the priority, and we understand that we need them to do this research and that we really appreciate them.
They'll be followed for 4 years, right? Do you know the results? And I don't mean you personally, but I mean, do the doctors that they're working with, the researchers, know the results of the HIV tests, or?
We know the results of that. When we test them, yes, we know that. But we don't know, the one thing that I failed to mention is that this is a double-blinded study, meaning that we don't know who's getting the actual study,
the actual
vaccine or who's getting a placebo. We don't know.
Okay.
And we won't know until the very end.
Okay, so if some people seroconverted during the test,
we will know that.
You'll know that, but you won't know whether or not they've taken the vaccine.
No, we will not.
How do they keep track of that? I guess somebody knows.
They're randomized,
yeah,
and so they have a number.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the end of the study, when they open up, when they kind of like unveiling,
mm-hmm.
They have a system in place so that they can match whatever their randomization number is.
Trial person number 57 and vaccine number 57 are matched, and whoever the main researcher is knows that 57 and 57 was a placebo or that 58 was not.
Right.
And that's how they match it. If 57 seroconverted, you don't know at this point whether or not it's because it didn't work or because he had a placebo.
Right. And, we don't know.
Which is part of the reason that you do the HIV counseling, because you don't want the ones who are on the placebo to think, I'm safe now, I'm getting a vaccine that hopefully.
And everyone gets that.
Same thing.
Period.
So that it's even. We need to take a break. We're talking to Deneen Robinson. She's the education coordinator for the HIV unit at UT Southwestern. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
SUV or other gas guzzler, the KNON Vehicle Donation Program can take it off your hands. Call us today at 877-KNON-AUTO or donate online at KNON.org. Our representative will take all of your information and arrange a convenient time to pick up your vehicle. All it takes is a call to 877-KNON-AUTO and we'll create great programming from your old car, truck, or boat. 877-KNON-AUTO.
September 17th, KNON is proud to present the official Buddy Whittington CD release party for Buddy's latest CD, Six Strings Svengali, at the Sun's Apartment Hall. Joining KNON and Buddy Whittington will be the amazing Holland K. Smith and the incredible saxophone blues of the Mike Johnson Band. It will be free barbecue dinner provided by the Alligator Cafe. Advance tickets for only $6. That's dinner and a show for only $6. Great blues, great food, only $6. You can't beat that deal anywhere in Dallas. So mark your calendars. This is Blue Lisa of Thursday morning's Big Texas Blues Show, and I'll be your host. $6 advance tickets are now available at knon.org, Bill's Records, and Forever Young Records in Grand Prairie. Saturday, September 17th at the Sun's Apartment Hall, the Buddy Whittington CD release party with special guests Holland K. Smith and the Mike Johnson Band and free barbecue from the Alligator Cafe. Tickets are only $6 in advance. Tickets cost more at the door, so get yours now.
Dallas Voice, a Texas LGBT media company, has covered news, entertainment, culture, and opinion in the North Texas LGBT community for more than 25 years. Every week, Dallas Voice reaches more than 45,000 North Texas LGBT readers in print. DallasVoice.com informs more than 170,000 visitors every month, with breaking news appearing throughout the day, every day in the Instant Tea blog. Dallas Voice is proud to support KNON Community Radio.
You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM HD1 in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Tappet here in the studio with Deneen Robinson, the education coordinator for the HIV research unit at UT Southwestern. Doc is here with us, as always, doing all of the behind-the-scenes stuff. But during the break, they're having this conversation
here.
It's good questions.
This conversation, and I was it looks like they're drawing all these people in as individuals. I was wondering if they were looking for dedicated pairs, people that are monogamous, they're in a relationship, they're not going to be really stepping outside that relationship as far as the test part.
Well, I mean, we don't discriminate in that regard. Because when you participate in the trial, you're going to participate as an individual. Mm-hmm. You're not going to participate as a couple. We're not going to call you in as a couple and go through the process with you as a couple. You'll go through it as individuals. When you do the questionnaires and those kinds of things, when you get the behavioral counseling, you go in as an individual. We have had some people who were in relationships where one person was negative and the other person was positive. And obviously the positive person can't participate in the study, but the negative person could, if they are having unprotected sex. And so in that case, we will offer behavioral counseling to the negative person understanding that they may be in a couple. If they disclose that to us, then yes, obviously we will, the person who's doing the behavioral counseling with them will reiterate some things to them about how to protect their partner, how to protect themselves, and that kind of thing in the context of their relationship. But in terms of participating in the study, the participants are in the study as individuals, whether they're in a relationship or not. They still are in the study as individuals.
Okay, appreciate that. Thank you.
And possibly, if they're just monogamous with each other at the beginning of the study, end of the study, I guess it won't change the study at all, but it might also even, if you have a good participant like that, help to see about the safety of the vaccine, the You're not testing for antibodies later. You're actually testing for.
So every time a person tests, when they do the HIV test with us, and I want you to think about this, because we're giving them the study vaccine is going through the process of having the immune system create antibodies, then if the vaccine is successful, then if we were to test them using our normal test.
For antibodies.
Right, then they would test positive.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why when we test our participants, we test for virus, because we want to make sure that they have truly not been exposed to HIV.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so you kind of brought up something that makes me bring up something else. Our study participants are encouraged to not get tested in community.
Right, because they will show...
It could be a false positive.
It's going to be it's the wrong test once
right.
they've had this. We've talked about a vaccine for prevention, and I know at Baylor they're doing some research, and it's a different type of vaccine. It's a cure vaccine, or not really a cure, but a treatment vaccine. Here's the research that I've heard about that they're doing there. It's worked on melanomas, and it's worked really well. What they're doing is they're extracting some stem cells from a person, and I think it's stem cells. It might be some other cells. Doing something to them, putting them in a centrifuge, and adding something to it, and then reinjecting. They've had very, very good success with controlling some very serious melanomas on people who had no other treatments available to them. So they decided to try this on HIV, and they did just a phase one trial on this, taking out the cells, doing whatever, reinjecting it into the person.
Okay.
Now they were doing the trial on people who were undetectable. They were HIV positive but undetectable because their HIV was controlled with medication. And what they did, what they found was, after a year on this vaccine, that they were no longer undetectable, that their viral load count went up to maybe 100. But it was low enough that they didn't have to go on drugs. And it kept people off drugs for a year.
Okay.
There were some very, very happy participants in
drug
trial. Because being on these HIV drugs is no picnic.
It's not. As somebody who's been living with HIV for 20 years, that would be awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you know of any other research, or is there any research going on at UT for treatment vaccines?
Well, there's no research going on for treatment vaccines, but we do have a study going on right now called START that is actually looking at how effective it would be to... in terms of the timing of starting antiretroviral treatment. The study is called Strategic Timing of Antiretroviral Treatment, and it's looking, there are two arms to the study. So we're looking for persons whose CD4 counts are over 500 that have never been on treatment ever, and we're looking to see if we, number one, follow them to see how they are doing, how their immune system is taking care of them, whether or not they're having any other health issues, not being on treatment, whether or not they are having any type of inflammation, anything going on with their organs as a response to HIV, or we're looking at if they are randomized to the treatment arm, whether or not starting treatment early will protect their immune system, will keep them healthy for a longer period of time with less toxicity and all those other issues that may be associated with being on treatment.
Okay, so all of these drugs, it's keeping the HIV in check, and we know that. And
right.
The newer drugs do less damage than some of the older drugs do.
That's what they say.
We know that. different on everybody. Everybody does these drugs differently. Everybody reacts to them a little bit differently.
Yes.
But some of the damage it can do is damage to vital organs.
Right.
So the goal is not to be on these drugs. That's the reason for this Baylor trial, is if we can get you off the drugs.
And your immune system can take care of you on its own, then that's fantastic.
Okay, but what about the poor drug companies that won't be making billions of dollars?
Well, I really don't have any commentary on that. Personally, I know that the thing that is awesome about the START study is that they're all participating.
Mm-hmm.
All the study is set up according to what the Department of Health and Human Services indicates are the best treatment options for individuals living with HIV, and so the pharmaceutical companies that are making drugs are all offering their drugs for this study, and so I believe that in terms of this partnership, it's beneficial all the way around if we can discover when truly is the best time for a person to start treatment, and also what actually is happening to the person starting treatment with a very healthy immune system, and then also what may happen to someone if we follow them very closely and then start them on treatment when we see that the immune system is declining, or if the person is starting to have opportunistic infections or other health issues. If we can, since we're watching them, if we can start treatment as soon as we see something, then what will the results be? What will we see?
Mm-hmm. With treatment right now, we're talking about viral load count, which means how much virus you have per what?
Cubic milliliter of blood, which is a teaspoon.
Okay. So in a teaspoon of blood, if we can find 350 parts of the virus.
Copies
of the virus. That's when we're saying right now you should be on drug treatment, right?
No.
Okay.
What we're saying is this. When your CD4 count is at 350.
Okay.
Or lower.
Okay.
According to the Department of Health and Human Services guidelines, we're saying that is the best time for you to start on treatment. Because if we wait till we know that if we wait till it gets to 200, then you're at risk for any number of opportunistic infections, the most common of which is PCP, which is a kind of pneumonia. So we want to start you on treatment before that process starts.
Okay. So with the START study, you're saying some people, everybody's going to go on treatment at 350. But not everybody's going to go on treatment at the same time. So you're testing to see if 400's good, 500's good, 600's good?
What we're doing is, we're looking to see if I'll just take us through the process, because that may be easier way to answer your question. So someone calls us and says, I'm newly infected. So they come in, they are given a CD4 count, given a test to see what their CD4 count is, what their viral load is, and their CD4 count's above 500. Within a couple of weeks, they come back in. We do the same test again. Two CD4 counts above 500, then they are randomized. They are not given an option. They agree to participate and be randomized to either the START treatment right then arm or the treatment deferred or treatment wait arm. With their physician, they decide, based on what the Department of Health and Human Service guidelines say are the best treatments for individuals living with HIV, if they go on the treatment arm or not. They still make that decision up front.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what their first regimen is going to be. If they are on the START treatment arm, then they immediately start, no matter if their CD4 count's 1,000. Mm-hmm. they will start.
Okay.
Otherwise, if they're on the deferred treatment arm, then we watch them, and once their CD4 count starts to decline, then based on the patient and the physician, they make a decision, okay, should we start now? Should we wait till 350? Mm-hmm. But at 350, yes.
Everybody's going to go on, and 350 is the standard right now.
That is the standard.
Okay, so so nobody in this study is going to be put in any more danger
no.
than anybody else
oh,
who has
no, no,
HIV
no.
and goes
no.
to the doctor. Right?
No.
Okay.
No.
Again, if somebody wants to participate in this, what would they do?
Call 214-590-0610.
And we're coming up to the end of the show. Give that number again. Is
214-590-0610.
Okay, and that's to UT Southwestern.
How about the website again?
The website for the vaccine study is ihaveaheartone.org.
Denine Robinson, I'm glad you said that on the air 5 times today. Come back and let us know how these studies are
I would actually like to do a follow-up because I do think the community should know what we're doing and how things are going. And also, there's always opportunity to volunteer. People are interested in volunteering to help us get the word out, to learn more about what we're doing. It will be fantastic to hear from folks.
And thank you so much for being here. This is the part of our show where our producer, Thomas Pearson, comes in and disavows any knowledge of our existence. And we'll be back next week with more Lambda Week.
Thank you for listening to the KNON Morning Line. We'd like to remind you that the views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KNON 89.3 FM.